5. Knockout Mouse.
That's him, Egan whispered. He's the one, isn't he?
The man leaning against the wall next to him with his hands in his pockets didn't have to look up to know whom his son was referring to. Even if the boy hadn't been talking about the new champion all morning, ignoring his breakfast and then loitering shamelessly around the gallery in hopes of catching a glimpse of the red-skinned newcomer, it would have been obvious. Upon reflection, it struck Artigan Truax that from the moment he'd come to Coghive 7, his 16-year-old son's day-to-day existence here had always been focused on the prison's current champion. Either fearing the day that he'd have to fight him, or idolizing him from afar. Or perhaps both.
Yes, that's the one,
Artigan said, still not raising his eyes as the new inmate strode past them 20 meters away. As you well know.
I hear he answers to Jagannath,
Egan said.
A mercenary and hired killer wanted in a dozen different systems. They say it means the tooth,
the man said with a nod, bemused at the boy's enthusiasm. Yes, I've heard that as well.
Do you think...
The question trailed off as Egan struggled to phrase it in some way that sounded offhand.
I mean, just supposing, if I had to, if it came down to it in a match, if I kept up my training, do you think I could ever?
Artigan didn't respond right away. He had never enjoyed withholding the truth from his son. And before the two of them had come here, he'd sworn an oath to always be absolutely honest with him. He owed the boy that much. After dragging Egan from one end of the galaxy to the other, making him stand at the edge of the crowd watching as Artigan took punch after punch, night after night, in an endless series of pit fights and loading bay brawls, the truth was the least he could offer. Yet again, today, he found himself incapable of speaking it. We fail ourselves again and again, he thought. Every day. It's what we do.
You're almost ready, he said, reaching out to toss the boy's fine reddish-brown hair. Another month or two of training, heavy training, mind you, with no backing down when it becomes difficult, ought to do the trick.
Egan's face lit up, and he turned to his father, hope shimmering in those pale green eyes.
Really?
No doubt in my mind,
Artigan said, putting on what he hoped was a reassuring smile. Unable to sustain the artifice any longer, he turned his attention back to the throng of inmates all around them. Go down and wait for me in the metal shop. You'll chase rats today.
Yes, sir, Egan smiled. I'll meet you there.
He turned and walked away, edging through the crowds of prisoners. Artigan watched him go, the smile fading from his face.
No doubt in my mind, he'd said. But there were doubts. All kinds of them.
It had been almost a year since they'd first arrived here, father and son. Scooped up alongside a handful of counterfeiters and low-level street enforcers, and plunged unceremoniously into Coghive 7's festering soup of sociopaths, killers, and thugs. But regardless of what the boy thought, it had not been an accident. Such was the deal that Artigan Truax had made with the shadowy hand of the galaxy. Since his arrival here, he had been matched a total of 5 times. He had triumphed in the first 3 of those matches, providing speedy, deliberate kills. Still strong and fast, with reflexes honed over 3 decades of fighting, he'd dispatched his opponents quickly, and even enjoyed a brief moment of celebrity among the population. The 4th match, however, against a caliche whose tusks were sharpened to surgical points, had not gone as well. Those tusks had gouged into his chest wall, puncturing his lung. Artigan had managed to snap one of them off and use it against the caliche in a stroke of good luck. Once again, he'd emerged battered, but victorious. And the 5th match
had nearly killed him. He'd been pitted against a Klaatu-Inian, and he'd known right away that he was in trouble. 2 minutes in, the thing had smashed him in the temple so hard that Artigan had almost lost consciousness. The pain was worse than anything he'd ever experienced, and amid it all, the beckoning promise of unconsciousness had been so seductive that Artigan had actually wanted to leap down into it, if only for a brief reprieve. Only the notion of leaving Egan alone here, unprotected amid a sea of predators, had kept him from blacking out completely. Rallying, he had managed, barely, to hold on long enough to twist the Klaatu-Inian's battle axe away and bury the blade in his opponent's skull. He had not been matched again. But the damage was done. The Klaatu-Inian's blow to his skull had capped off a career of closed head injuries and concussions. And ever since then, Artigan suffered chronic migraines, nausea, and night sweats. His vision, once his greatest asset, so keen and clear that he'd been able to see an ambush reflected in his opponent's pupils, had gone foggy around the edges. Sometimes he awoke to dazzling halos of opalescent light, auras that he'd come to associate with the onset of excruciating pain. He'd developed a slight tremor, and once, 2 months ago, he had a seizure, thankfully after Egan had already fallen asleep. When the boy had rolled over in his bunk and muttered sleepily to his father, Artigan had assured him it was only a dream. After that, he'd smuggled a spoon out of the mess hall and slept with it clamped between his teeth, just in case it happened again, to keep him from biting his tongue. These days, whenever he was out among Genpop, he kept his hands tucked in the pockets of his prison uniform to hide the way they trembled. He hid that from the boy as well, although how successfully he didn't know. All the strength and poise and confidence that he'd brought to the ring were gone. Some mornings he could barely see straight, let alone fight. In his 55th year of life, he'd become what the other inmates referred to as a knockout mouse. A former champion who'd hit the ceiling of his abilities and was waiting for the inevitable final bout. The one that would kill him.
Heard you were looking for me.
Artigan half turned, hands still tucked in the front pockets of his prison tunic, and saw the grizzled old guard Voistock standing just behind the semi-opaque mesh of wire and transparasteel, blaster in hand. How long the CO had been standing there, Artigan didn't know. He hadn't heard him approach over the noise of the gallery. Leaning backward, careful to keep his eyes on the crowds of inmates passing in front of him and not to move his lips, Artigan spoke just loud enough to be heard.
Appreciate you coming. Skip it, Voistock said. You got something for me or not?
Artigan's right hand came out of his pocket to reveal a finger-thin stretch of polymer filament string, carefully coiled. He slipped it through the mesh into the guard's waiting palm. Voistock took the string, shook it out, and stretched it in front of him, scowling at it.
What the kark is this?
The item that we spoke of earlier.
You promised me 30,000 credits,
Voistock sneered.
Told me you had an off-world private bank account with an untapped balance.
Officer, look at what I gave you. What do you see?
A piece of string,
Voistock said.
A lousy stretch of thread you pulled off your shirt cuff. And another maggot trying to weasel his way out of getting matched.
He tossed the filament to the permacrete floor beneath his boots and was already turning around to disappear back to wherever he'd come from.
You waste my time like this again, and you aren't going to wait for your next bout to get your ticket punched. You understand what I'm telling you, you worthless puke?
Wait! Artigan said. His head was starting to ache in that old familiar place behind his left eye.
Just look at it. Please.
Something of the desperation in his voice must have given the guard pause, because Voistock stopped, leaning down to pick up the filament again and holding it up for a better look. The glow of recessed lighting shimmered off the array of tiny knots tied throughout the filament, whole clusters of them, none any bigger than the glint of light reflected in the guard's suspicious gaze. When Artigan spoke again, his voice was quiet and patient.
There are over 6 billion different knots in the galaxy, Officer Voistock. Each one reads like a specific deformation of a circle in three-dimensional space, as unique as individual letters in an alphabet.
Voistock grunted.
Huh? Is that supposed to mean anything to me?
What you're holding in your hand is called a kipu,
Artigan said,
also known as a talking knot. Any droid with the most basic analytical drive will be able to unravel each knot linking integral. It shouldn't take more than 30 seconds. You'll end up with a 21-digit number.
What? Like a code?
Artigan nodded.
The first 12 digits of this kipu make up the ID reference for the orbital account off Moonalimst with a balance of 30,000 credits. The last 9 are the password to access all those funds.
He flicked his eyes up at Voistock.
See for yourself.
Nuts.
The guard snorted, but he slipped the filament into his own pocket.
You're as crazy as a mutant womp rat, old man. You know that.
Artigan smiled thinly.
You wouldn't be the first to make that observation. Say you are telling the truth,
Voistock said.
You want to tell me how a washed-up chunk of Minok dung like you gets his meat hooks on that kind of cash?
Winnings,
Artigan said.
Saved up from 15 years of fights.
There's no way you could make that much in pit fights.
I was saving for my retirement.
Artigan cocked a bushy eyebrow at the gallery and its inhabitants.
I never thought I'd be spending it here.
Retirement, huh?
This time Voistock actually chuckled.
You got a funny way of looking at things, old man, you know that?
Perhaps we both do.
How do you figure?
We both spend our days walking around this floating slice of hell,
Artigan said.
Just on different sides of the wire, that's all.
Voistock glared at him narrowly.
Yeah, well, one big difference between us is I'm not walking around with a bomb inside my heart,
he said, reaching down to the flat-packed drop box on his belt.
6 digits, and down you go permanently. Maybe you could use a reminder of that.
Wait.
Artigan looked at him, eyebrows raised.
If I've done something to offend you...
You know, I don't even have to justify this to the warden.
A narrow, almost cunning look stole over Voistock's face, something that couldn't really be called a smile.
All I have to say is that the prisoner posed a threat. No board of inquiry, no paperwork. Shoot, I don't even have to report it. That's how disposable you are.
He leaned in.
Where's your kid?
Now just wait a moment.
A sudden bolt of panic shot across Artigan's face.
What are you doing?
Just a little demonstration.
Voistock reached down to his dropbox and tapped a series of digits onto the console.
Your boy is inmate 11033, right?
Please don't.
Voistock shrugged.
Too late.
He hit enter. Artigan didn't move. 2 meters off to his right, a Volpterine inmate who'd been leaning with his back to the wall went suddenly rigid. And then his tusked face went abruptly slack. Knees buckling, he slid down against the wall and crumpled to a heap on the floor of the gallery. For a moment, the other prisoners in the area gave the Volpterine a sidelong glance. then went along with their business as a clanking, bulky Class 5 treadwheel droid rolled over, hooked its manipulators to the corpse's ankles, and began to drag it away.
Whoops.
Voistock shrugged.
Must have typed the numbers in wrong.
He flicked his eyes up at Artigan.
Next time, I'll make sure I get him right.
The CO returned his attention to the Kipu, running his fingers over the cryptic arrangement of the knots.
This better be legit.
It is.
Artigan's skull was pounding so hard that his eyeballs felt like they were going to squeeze right out of their sockets. And more than anything, he yearned for the silence and darkness of a quiet corner in his cell. But the canny part of him realized that any indication of weakness might ruin the faint flicker of trust between himself and the guard.
If you're yanking me on this,
Voistock said,
it's not going to end pretty for you or your boy. You see that now, don't you?
Artigan just nodded.
Just take it.
The CO's eyes narrowed.
And in return, what? You want me to make sure you don't get matched again? Protect that youngling of yours?
He shook his head.
What is you've been training him hard on your own? Trying to teach him the 52 fists? Get him ready for his first match? You think he actually stands a chance in there?
Artigan drew in a slow breath through his teeth. Releasing it seemed to cost him something deep and heartfelt that he would have preferred to keep to himself indefinitely.
No,
he admitted in a voice barely above a whisper. The boy's not a fighter. A blind man could see that. He's fast enough, I suppose, and he's growing stronger every day. But he's no killer. And that's not something you can teach. It hurt to say these things out loud. All the terrible certainties that he'd mulled over in private, night after sleepless night. But it was also a relief to give them voice and hear them spoken aloud. And I know there's nothing you can do to keep either of us from being matched again. That's well outside your scope of influence.
So what then?
Voistock glared at him, visibly annoyed.
You can't honestly tell me that you're just handing over your life savings to me for no reason.
Artigan shook his head.
Not at all. Then what do you want?
I want something much bigger, Artigan said. I want you to help us escape.
Six. The whole thing runs on blood.
20 minutes later, Siddiqui and Vesto Slipher were taking the turbo lift down through the levels of Coghive 7, the moon standing quietly on his side of the lift, with his hands folded together and the same slight inscrutable smirk on his lips. Seeing it now, Siddiqui found that she didn't like that smirk any more than she had 20 minutes earlier.
Our loan payments are up to date, she told the moon.
I really don't see why the IBC should have any reason to investigate our operations here.
Investigate is perhaps too piquant a word, Slipher said, gazing placidly at the lift's readout. You may consider this a routine audit, if you prefer.
And is it standard protocol to dispatch top-level executives on routine audits? The moon beamed at her as if conceding some minor point.
I see. In fact, to be perfectly frank, Warden, Coghive 7 is something of a unique case in the IBC's Outer Rim portfolio. Of course, there's no question of your profitability or the ongoing security of our investment here.
So if we're all so in love with each other, Siddiqui asked, why the sudden interest in our operation?
Oh, the moon said. I assure you there's nothing new about our interest in Coghive 7, Warden.
The lift began to slow down.
If anything, the IBC has always been highly sensitive to the unique particulars of your rather spectacular success out here in the middle of nowhere. The smile returned, as pleasant as ever. After all, what you're doing here is another form of gambling. Yet unlike the casinos, pod racing courses, and sabacc parlors that the IBC bankrolls, your operation never seems to have a bad fiscal quarter. Not once. To be perfectly frank, we've begun wondering how you've managed a profit margin on such a sustainable basis.
You make that sound like it's a bad thing.
Of course not.
Something sharpened in the moon's gaze.
But wouldn't you agree that if something seems too good to be true, it probably is?
Too good to be true?
Siddiqui cocked an eyebrow. Well, in that case, take a look.
The lift had stopped completely. As the doors opened, she gestured for him to step out onto the open scaffolding and couldn't help feeling a twinge of amusement as Slipher's eyes widened slightly, losing their veneer of detachment. Below them, a herd of inmates burst into the gallery, snarling and jeering, shoving one another aside, feet clanging on the steel gallery floor as they formed an open circle. In the middle of the circle, someone was screaming.
Ah, Siddiqui said, the morning festivities have already begun.
Directly underneath them, 30 yards down, three inmates, all of them human, with shaved heads and thick beards, were holding a fourth prisoner and beating him savagely with what looked like long shafts of sharpened bone. When the victim fell to his knees, one of his assailants hoisted him back up again, while another plunged the sharpened bone spear directly into his chest, shoving it through so far that it burst out between the inmate's shoulder blades in a spray of blood and shattered vertebrae.
Oh, the moon said thickly. What?
Bone kings, Siddiqui said.
Along with the Gravity Massive, they're one of the biggest gangs in the Hive. She shrugged. Every so often, tensions boil over.
The moon considered this for a moment.
How can there be any allegiance within the gangs when one member might be matched against another at any given moment?
We screen for that,
Siddiqui said. The algorithm factors in sociological variants as well as physical ones.
Actually, we've discussed the idea of pitting entire crews against one another.
Really?
Oh, yes.
The prospect of a crew-on-crew tag team brawl, for example, between certain members of the Kings and the Gravity Massive, could be something that the gambling community has never seen before.
It's already generated significant interest with some of the odds makers.
I can see why,
the moon said. He had to raise his voice to be heard. Down below, the impaled prisoner was somehow shrieking louder. His gurgling cries only brought laughter from the crowd, whose response in turn seemed to encourage the three kings to greater frenzies of violence. Howling, they yanked their weapons loose and stabbed their victim again until he collapsed, sagging forward, his broken frame dangling on the end of the makeshift spear like a twisted puppet. A great cheer went up from the mob of prisoners, and then, as suddenly as it had begun, the assault was over, the other inmates drifting away, leaving the three Bone Kings to bend over the mangled corpse of their victim.
Now, what are they doing?
Slipher managed.
Deboning.
The moon swallowed audibly. I beg your pardon.
They ripped the bones out,
Siddiqui told him. Sharpened them on the walls, carry them around in their sleeves, that sort of thing.
And you permit that as well?
Siddiqui shrugged.
Every standard week or so, the guards will search the cells and confiscate whatever they find.
I see. The Moon nodded. I suppose it's all great theater.
Oh, no, Siddiqui said. It's not theater at all. That's one of the reasons that gamblers can't seem to get enough of what we do here. Face it, Mr. Slipher. In a galaxy where so much has become virtual or simulated, what we offer is as real as it gets. We've actually discussed the possibility of offering VIP packages to high rollers so that they could come and watch the fights in person.
Here? To the prison itself?
We've had real interest from communities as far away as Coruscant.
Well, the Moon was nonplussed. It seems that you're just a font of brilliant ideas, Warden.
Not just me. Siddiqui nodded modestly. Although I do like to think of this place as a crucible from which true superiority emerges, and everyone profits. The Ratataki people have a particular memorable way of putting it. Chi moto mando sangui.
Meaning?
The whole thing runs on blood.
A provocative sentiment, the Moon said, looking down again as the three inmates turned and fled with an armload of bloody bones, leaving the shapeless, scooped-out mass on the steel floor behind them. They're amazingly fast, aren't they?
The Moon shuddered.
Although the catwalk where they were standing was enclosed in a thick layer of protective transparasteel, the overpowering smell of spilled blood, dirty fabric, and airborne bacteria hung permanently in the space around them. A little bit different from the Sabacc parlors on Lamored, isn't it? She said. A new possibility seemed to have occurred to Slipher.
Can any of the inmates see us up here?
Siddiqui shook her head. Not from this angle. We have guards stationed at various posts around the upper scaffolding, and cameras down below.
And you just allow them to wander freely like that?
Free is hardly the word, Siddiqui said, and checked the chrono display on her tablet. They're always watching each other. And we're always watching them.
So you've never had an escape?
She cocked an eyebrow at him. I thought we were discussing profit margins, Mr. Slipher.
It's a valid question. These inmates of yours have nothing to do all day but study their surroundings and isolate any vulnerabilities in your security systems.
We've implanted every inmate with...
I'm aware of the procedure, the Moon said dryly. Still, it occurs to me...
His voice trailed off.
Never mind.
What?
Well, you've given me an admirable demonstration of why your operation here continues to generate such fervent interest among gamblers and blood sport aficionados. But that's only part of it, isn't it?
I'm not sure that I follow.
Oh, I think you do.
His fingers knit themselves inward, pressing against his chest in thought.
In order for Coghive 7 to make the astronomical profit that it reports to my board of directors, you have to predict the winner of the bouts almost 100% of the time.
He turned to her.
I don't suppose you'd be interested in telling the IBC how exactly you do that?
Siddiqui glanced back at the lift. Come with me, she said.